Are you ready and super psyched?
I'm ready and super psyched.
You got a lot to say. Got a lot in your brain today.
As always.
Are you going to talk like that the entire time?
I'm Batman.
Great.
Great. Welcome to the podcast. Do you like butter on popcorn? It's too greasy.
It sounds like something Batman would say. Helicopter.
Helicopter.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, Jazzy Jay, other host of the podcast. Happy to be here with you today, brother.
Are you excited to have some big conversation? Do you have lots of thoughts on your brain?
I mean, I always have lots of thoughts on my brain. You know, it's a good day to podcast.
Yeah, I think so too. I have had an interesting bit of 75 hard update.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah, so it's a twofold thing. I had two big realizations in the past week. The first of which was that I got food poisoning on Monday evening.
I've been hearing the family text about lots of that. Seems like everyone who was at your house on Sunday, or like 50% of the people there, got some form of the sponges,
some kind of sponges. Yeah. I think we had like maybe let's see, how many people were there? I don't know, like let's say it was 12 adults. I think seven of us got the sponges. It seems like something had gone awry. Everybody got sick on Monday evening. It was hilarious the next morning texting and be like, oh my gosh, I feel awful, and it's like, no way, me too. Except for you. Somehow you were able to get through it.
I managed to survive. It seems like people have narrowed in on the deviled eggs as the potential culprit, one of which I did eat, and yet I did not get sick. So
I know.
I don't know. I'm not questioning it, nor complaining, but I'm just happy I didn't get sick. Because I was sick recently, and I didn't care for it.
It is the actual worst. Yeah. It is the actual worst. But it basically came down to this for me. So I got through Monday, got my 75 hard in, hit all my goals. Everything was good. And then it was the middle of the night that I woke up with it and was just like in severe pain, you know, and just, yeah. Sponges the whole evening and the rest. But that meant that Tuesday I found myself in a very dire position in terms of my 75 hard challenge, because I'm on, I think as of Tuesday was day 38.
Man.
That I was in the process. And so, you know, 38 days or 37 rather, where I had completed every single objective every day the whole time. And here I am on day 38 and it's like, I can by noon, my Fitbit had said I had like 173 steps.
Right. Like you're just not moving. You're obviously not in a place where you can consume the protein challenge of your challenge.
Right. The dietary aspect was just like off the table entirely.
Yeah. You know, probably the idea of working out for a good 90 minutes was really off the table as well.
It was indeed. So my like compromise with myself, because I was, you know, I was having this like weird showdown, because it absolutely occurs to me that like there is no one holding me accountable to this challenge other than me.
Right.
Like, you know, it's not like someone will be upset with me for missing a day, but like my genuine fear was disappointing myself.
Right.
You know, and it was like, I don't want to like get to the end of it and be like, you know, maybe that day I could have gone, maybe I could have. And the fact is I couldn't have. I mean, there was no way that it was going to happen. But the one thing that I had set for myself, like my goal was like, can I just get my 10,000 steps in? Like, it's not a workout. I'm not going outside of my house. Like, I'm not going for like a walk around the block or anything. Cause I was like, you know, I've had negative calories today.
Right.
You know, and so that was like my challenge to myself. So on Tuesday evening, as I was like starting to be like on the uptick a little bit, I was like just pacing in my living room back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Can you get to 10,000?
You get 10,000. And it was so sad. I mean, it was like I would hit like 6,000 and I would like, you know, I'd sit down and be like, man,
I'm exhausted.
I don't know if, and you know,
I can't move.
The thing too is that like you're, and this is like the Fitbit counter gives you like each day, it's like you're on like a streak.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm mm-hmm. on, like my 38 day streak is in jeopardy. And it's like, I will not lose my streak.
Never.
This is going to happen.
Yeah.
And so slowly but surely, I just kind of like kept peacefully walking back and forth, kept going back and forth. Finally, I hit the number, and I think I like literally closed out the day with like 10,040.
Right.
You know, like, it was
like my final steps will be up the stairs to my bed.
Upstairs to my bed, and I'm out.
Yeah.
So I made that. I made that, which was good. And I'm just going to basically allow that day and not feel like my challenge broke.
Yeah, I think that's pretty okay. That's like what standards are you holding yourself to there? Like, don't let your pride get in the way of your accomplishments
or health.
Yeah, or health. It's like, yeah, you're right. Like, I think this is like the one of the weird things about challenges like this, where like it's like 75 hard. Like, can you do this for 75 days? And it's like the goal of the challenge, I think, is like at the end, like you will have developed some new habits. Hopefully, you maybe took like 2 or 3 steps forward and will take like just 1 or 2 steps backwards. And like, you're just overall, like, that's the intended impact of the challenge.
Right.
But sometimes what's weird about like lengthy challenges like this is that the act of the challenge itself is actually not
healthy.
That healthy.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, are you putting yourself in harm's way in the name of being healthy? And it's like, if you're doing that, then you're not doing it.
Right. Yeah. Like, so there's like some weird stuff, like, even just on these, like, the 30-day Peloton thing I'm doing, one, also...
You look great, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
Like, noticed the difference?
I have absolutely noticed the difference.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yeah. You are, like, yesterday, I know you were kind of, like, tensing your forearms, and
yeah.
I was like, you can see, like, the outlines of your muscles, like,
coming
through.
Oh, man, I shouldn't have worn long sleeves.
I know, man. Like, gotta show everybody the pythons.
I have this weird... So, when we were kids, and we were, we had, you know, Instant Messenger on the computer.
AOL Instant Messenger.
We had this computer chair that had like a nice tall back on it.
Yeah.
And oftentimes the way I would sit at the computer was with the chair turned around and my armpits like wedged on top of the chair and
my
arms hanging down to the keyboard. And as like a you know, high schooler who was running cross country and didn't have much fat on him, this would make the veins in my this act would constrict blood getting to my arms basically.
Right, yeah.
But the veins in my arms would be like popping like crazy.
Yes.
And like I always thought like it looked really cool. And so it's like I had this weird problem now as an adult where I'm like, I want my arms to look like that.
I want my
like,
veins back.
Like, I want that back. But it's like, but you didn't even look that good then. It was really just how you were sitting on the chair. Like,
no,
but like I think about it, and sometimes I'll see like some semblance of it, and I'm like, oh, I'm close.
Okay, it's coming. Yeah. No, this is a hilarious thing, but I mean, I definitely get it because like my right arm will show my veins, really nicely. It's like I've got like a good pattern, and then like my left arm a little bit, but not nearly as good.
Mm-hmm.
And so like recently we went through the whole like getting a tattoo sleeve thing, and one of my big qualms is that for some reason, and I have no idea why, I imagine it on my right arm.
Sure.
My right arm has my good vein patterns.
Ah.
And so I'm like, well, I have to do it on my left arm then, you know, because like, I don't want to cover up my good vein patterns.
You just need to go in there like on a real vascular day when your veins are popping, you know, and just like, well, maybe this would be a problem. Maybe it'd be weird to like,
tattoo.
You need to like do that, draw where the veins go, and they go on a day where they're not like poking needles at your veins.
Uh-huh.
This is turning into a weird thing. But then you could have like, if it's going all the way down your arm, you could just have like a snake right on top of like the vein or something, like all the way up.
Whoa.
You know, then it would look, then maybe that could even accent it. It could like, maybe you could create like a visual effect.
A visual effect.
Yeah.
That'd be very interesting. A little garter snake.
Yeah. Every time you like, that dude, you like flex your arm, it's like moving. That'd be weird.
I feel like someone turned off the podcast.
Someone did. Yeah. Never mind. We're so sorry about talking about that. Anyway, Peloton thing. This is something I have noticed going on. One, the idea. Yeah, I've had days where I'm like, oh, man, is it even worth it? Like, is it that big a deal if I miss one day? And I'm like, no, the streak. Like, when I log in, I can see, like, 3 rows of calendar now. I'm like, oh, man, I don't want, like, a white dot to appear in my streak.
Right. No,
can't have
not.
That. Yeah, so that's a better thing. But, like, certain days, I've definitely been like, you know what? I'm just doing like a low impact ride today. Like that's going to be my ride. I don't have to go like all out every single day.
Sure.
Like certain days I think it's more like do less today so you can do more tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of thing. I get that 100%.
But I have other days, you know, I will pick like a really challenging ride to go do. And something I've noticed is that you think on the days when you're doing like a low impact ride, it would be like a relief almost like, okay, I don't really have to try that hard today. I'm just going to be down here and I'll just get it done. But I have noticed that like when I pick like a hills ride or something, the time just flies by. Whereas like if I'm doing a low impact ride, I'm like staring at the clock the whole time. I'm like, oh man, it's like boring.
Right.
And it's like in a weird way, like even though the ride itself is easier, it's like almost harder to do the ride because it's boring the whole time and it feels like it takes longer. And so often, even if I'm not like feeling crazy motivated to do a hard ride, but I just pick one anyway, like I will become motivated in the ride.
Sure.
And then I'm just like, let's go for it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I definitely get that. Like, I think even that goes back to the early days of cross country. Like I remember occasionally our coach would give us like a fun run day on a Friday, which meant we only ran like 4 to 5 miles that day.
Right. Yeah.
But I do remember like getting back from those, like, oh, thank goodness. It's just Friday. We don't have a meet tomorrow. Like we're just going easy. You know, it's like a chill day.
Right.
Those would always be the days like, and I think for me, my mental preparation for the exercise is so vital to my approach to it.
Right.
So it's like, if I'm like, you know, mentally psyching myself up to do it, then it's like, all right, let's go, you know? But if I'm sort of like, today's easy, it's no big deal, I'm barely even taking it seriously.
Right.
Then I'll get out there and I'll just kick my butt.
Yeah. You're just like, yeah, I don't have to try. I don't have to try. And it's like, you will still have to try.
You just still have to try. Yeah. Yeah.
There is this one function you can do on the Peloton called lane break.
Okay.
Which is like, instead of staring at an instructor who's like, you know, saying motivational things and telling you what to do.
Yeah.
It's more like a gamified thing.
Oh, that's
where
neat.
It's got like 6 different lanes and you're like controlling a rolling wheel. And as you like adjust the resistance, the wheel will move left to right into the different lanes or whatever.
Okay.
And there'll be like certain tracks you're supposed to be in at certain times. So like,
that's cool.
Yeah.
That's very clever.
It is very clever. And like, you know, there'll be like, sometimes it'll just be like, just be in this track and you'll be getting the points. Right. And like, you get like points for if you're in the right track at the right time.
Right. Right. Right.
Right. And then there'll be like a big green section where it's like, okay, while you're in the green section, you have to be pedaling this fast the entire time.
Uh-huh.
Or like, there'll be like an orange section and it's like, all right, if you can like go for 200% for the length of this orange thing, you'll get like a point boost or whatever.
Nice.
So yeah, but I've done it like 3 or 4 times throughout the month so far. And it has been an extremely interesting thing because like when you're with the instructors or whatever, they'll be like, all right, set it up to like 50 or 55 or 60. And it's like, or they'll say the numbers out loud and you have to like watch the number go up and down. And you can get very in your head about like, oh, this is a big number. Oh man, I don't know if I can do it.
Right.
But like when you're doing the lanes, it's like, clear, the further right you get, the harder it is. Like, you know that. But I am not looking at the resistance number very much. I'm just like, I just need to move the wheel to get to where I need to be. And it's like, it's complete. It's as if that number is blind to me. And it's like, sometimes I will look down and notice it and be like, oh my gosh, am I going this fast at this number right now? Like,
yes.
You know, it's like, it's so weird how much your brain can get in your own way and like stop you from doing things.
No, it is. I mean, and that actually like ties in nicely with like my next bit of information. But yeah, it's like your own like psychological calibration, if you will. It's like it plays such a vital role in so many different aspects of your life, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like I think when it comes to like various kinds of exercise, it's like whenever I've been able to make it like a very social sport, I've always found that I excel very quickly at it because I pay less attention to like the physical, you know, aspect of it, like the like me, my body, like fatiguing and stuff.
Right.
Because I'm there to like chat with my friends, but that usually means that like because I'm not paying attention, like, oh, my muscle hurts or I'm tired or I'm sweating or, you know, like whatever, I just keep going,
right?
You know, and I do great.
Yeah.
And then if it is like the type of thing where I'm just like out like on a run by myself, all I think about the entire time is how far have I gone, how fast am I going,
right,
how much is left.
Mm-hmm.
Like, should I turn back now, am I even gonna make it, Why am I even doing this?
Right.
You know, like, because I went for a run the other day, and that was exactly like the entire time I was just like, what am I doing out here? Yeah. But so I, the other big thing with 75 Hard is that I've been reading a lot of nonfiction. And I remember at the very beginning of the pop, I think probably in the first, I'm gonna guesstimate maybe like first 20 episodes, I feel like we talked a fair bit about like self-help books.
A little bit, for sure.
Do you remember this?
Yeah, like, I know we've talked about like the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People on a variety of occasions.
Okay, yes. Yeah. You're right. And so that's been something where I've always been very resistant to this style of reading. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, for the most part, like if people ever asked me for like a book recommendation, I would be willing to bet that like out of 10, maybe one of them would have been nonfiction.
Right.
And then everything else would have been some type of fiction.
Right.
But because I've been like burning through these books through 75 Hard, because one of the aspects is reading these books each day.
Reading like non or self-help books.
Yeah.
Nonfiction books, I guess.
Nonfiction. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like the ones that I've been reading, I don't know that they all fall into the category of self-help so much as just being extremely informative and definitely falling into things that I like to talk about.
Right.
But one of the ones that I just finished reading was called Dopamine Nation. And it has so much to do, and maybe this is obvious and maybe it's not, but the book was a lot more about like addiction than I expected.
Okay.
You know, because I tend to think of like dopamine as like a, like something that actually mentally goes through my brain, I would say multiple times a week. I don't know if I could go so far as to say like daily, but like I can recognize like, oh man, that totally just gave me like a huge dopamine hit. And like, I feel excited or like, you know, jazzed or whatever.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm like amped. And so as you sort of go through it, I just really feel like it's a very fascinating book to read. And I will offer a disclosure that some of the examples are a little explicit in nature in terms of like what somebody might be addicted to, just as sort of like a heads up if you dive into it. But what was kind of fascinating about it is that something that you do daily, and like smartphones is such an easy thing to like look at for this. Like,
yeah.
You know, if we ever need a little dopamine hit, we can literally just pull out our phone and something interesting is there to look back at us.
Right.
And the thing is though, is that it's kind of this, like the more you do that and the longer that relationship continues, like the less it will give you each time. And therefore the further you have to push it each time in order to kind of get like that initial hit again.
Right. This is like, I feel like it's a very similar thing with, you know, your morning cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Like when you first start drinking coffee, that coffee will wake you right up and you will be like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And now I'm like, yeah, I can drink 3 cups of coffee. And it's like, whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's like, am I like super stoked? And this can be the case, like, you know, like with your favorite movie, for example, like you watch it for the first time and you're like, that was the best thing ever. And then it's like, you go back and you like want to watch it again. And it's like, there's no doubt about it that people can like rewatch things and still love them over and over and over again. But it's so hard to like get it back, you know,
right.
like that first,
that same experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I even remember like there were moments as kids where there would be examples of this, like where, we had a trampoline for a period of time. And I remember our younger brother and I, Tyler, would go out there and like, we would play a game where it's like, I don't know, ninjas versus aliens or something. And we would be ninjas and we would be fighting off aliens that were just like invisible creatures.
Right. Yeah.
Impeding onto the trampoline. And
right.
It gave you a reason to do like jump kicks and
right,
punches.
Like, kapow!
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
You know, and it'd be the type of thing. It's like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. You know? And then it's like the next day, like, we want to go play ninjas and aliens. And it's like, you get out there and it's like,
I never sort of did all this.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if I can get it back. Like, yeah. You know, it's like, it must've just been a yesterday thing. Why isn't it fun again? Anyway, but that's not always the case. And so sometimes you'll find that there are...
Ninjas vs. Aliens sounds like a great movie, by the way.
Ninjas vs. Aliens?
Absolutely.
I do like it. I do like it. Maybe it can be our second feature film after the hit classic, 27 Butts.
27 Butts, the sequel, Ninjas vs. Aliens.
No, what? Nobody saw it coming.
Nobody saw it coming. Exactly.
The Butt family, secretly, all black belts.
That's right.
Anyway.
That would be such a hilarious twist if it's this gigantic family, but everyone's super into karate.
That would be really funny. I think we can add that to our headcanon.
Doesn't seem hard.
Doesn't seem hard at all. Right. Like, you don't even have to address it. There could just be like a bunch of like multicolored belts like framed on the walls and stuff
right.
Like, throughout the home. And it's like, what's with all the karate
stuff?
Nobody talks about it. It's just like, clearly karate is a big deal.
I feel like, yeah, you don't have to address it at all, but then at some point in the movie, you can also have like one of the classic way too long Peter fights the chicken fights.
Oh, you know, yeah, like Family Guy.
All of a sudden, the two people are just fighting all the way through the house.
Right.
Everything is getting wrecked.
Maybe the toilet gets knocked over.
Right, maybe the toilet. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yes, the toilet gets over, and then there were none.
Anyway, where was I going with this? Okay, so yes, but as I'm reading through, I can't believe we got to 27 Butts from Dopamine Nation. It's
27 Butts.
Clinical psychology, too.
It is applicable. It has so many, you know, interpretations, and it's so deep.
Right, I know. Right, it's true. It has more depth than people expect.
Exactly.
Yeah. I didn't even mean to. So as I'm reading through this book, though, as I'm like hearing all of these examples, it was amazing to me how quickly I was like, man, that's a thing. Like that's, I was like, you know, I'm like halfway through the book and I'm like, I'm done with social media entire. I'm deleting it.
That's
all.
It.
Like, I'm just like, I'm canceling everything. And, it's been very fascinating to see just how quickly like my awareness about this particular thing has been able to, for me to like now spotlight aspects of my personality.
Right.
Where it's like, oh man, this is definitely like,
this is a thing,
a piece of what's happening. So it's one of those where, because there is, you know, that degree of explicit nature to it, I'm sort of like maybe slightly hazy about going around. Of course, now I'm explaining it on a podcast, so people have now heard that I've recommended it. It's been very interesting, and I think that it's been fun for me how these nonfiction reads have definitely been affecting my life.
Yeah.
And now what's happening, like normally I would have like a backlog of like Audible credits, right. You know, and it's just sort of like, I've got six. Do you have any recommendations, something I can read? And, you know, sometimes people give me something and I'm like, I don't really like, you know, whatever. It just like sits in my library and it's like, maybe right. Eventually I'll get to it. That's what happened with Name of the Wind. And then
yeah.
Ended up being amazing.
Look at the difference.
Right. But so now I'm like, I'm burning through my Audible credits and now it's like, I'll finish a book and I'm like, well, you know what? If there's one justifiable purchase I can make, it's books.
Right.
You know, I got here eventually from the start of this conversation because we were talking about your Peloton workouts. And I think it's because it's like and people know this already, but it's like, the idea of making change in your life, like, has to come from inside of yourself.
Right.
Like, you need to want to make the change. And so, like, I think an example that they give is that, like, alcoholics are like, aware of the fact that drinking alcohol is bad.
It's right.
Like, they're not, like, oblivious to that.
Yeah.
It's just reaching that stage where, like, they have decided, like, I'm gonna do this.
Right.
And so I think that those are a lot of big things that have been happening to me lately where I'm like, okay, I'm going to fix this thing and I'm going to go for it.
All right.
I'm going to try.
Well, excellent. Yeah. One of my new, this is also coming from just the Peloton challenge. It's weird. Yeah. The Peloton challenge is, I guess my new like internal mantra or just like, self-help phrase that I keep like saying to myself and trying to like put in front of myself is just the phrase, you can do hard things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like they say it, the instructor I use a lot is, Emma Lovewell. She's definitely my favorite instructor on Peloton. If you need a recommendation, good place to start. But it's like, it feels like they always know exactly the time to say certain motivational phrases. I guess they are professionally good at it.
But I'm sure there is a degree of art form to
right.
it. Yeah.
So it'll be like, you know, right at like the peak moment or something. You'll be like, I'm so tired. But, you know, they'll hit you with like one of these things. And I feel like that one really just stuck with me. It was like, you can do hard things. And it was just like, man, what a good thought. Like, how often do you not do something or like or shy away from something? Like, that's just going to be like difficult. Like, I can't do it or something. It's like, no, you can do hard things. Probably you're already doing hard things. And so that's like my new mantra, that whenever I think I have something I'm really not looking forward to, or like, this is going to be hard, just like, no, that's okay. It will be hard, but you can do it.
It's a very good reminder. And like, is this the type of thing, would you, because this I just had one of these breakthrough moments to myself, would you put a physical sign in your house that says the words, you can do hard things?
Benjamin, I'm so, so glad you asked me this question, because you're completely unaware of something that I have in the works, which is that I emailed our graphic designer, Vaishan, for just a personal project. And I was like, Vaishan, I need you to make me a motivational sign that is that has a font that you can come up with that is motivational and challenges the person reading it, but it's also welcoming because it's going to be hanging in just like the kids' playroom as well.
Right.
It's like a welcome thing to the family, but also if you're on the bike, like you're staring right at, and it's like, work harder sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And the phrase is just, yes, you can do hard things, because directly in front of the bike is an open square section of wall that is begging to have something in it, and right now you're just staring straight ahead at nothing. So I'm just waiting on the artwork back from Vaishan for my you can do hard things sign.
This is the most remarkable. I cannot believe that I landed
already,
on that question.
Already that in
is,
the works.
That is so fantastic. Because okay, so I can't remember, the book The Fault in Our Stars,
yeah,
refers to these like little, I think they call them encouragements.
Oh yes, yeah, I think that is what they call the Isaac's mom or something, or maybe no, is it Hazel Grace's mom has encouragements all over the house,
right? Like yeah, just like the little things that say like a sweet sentiment or
right,
whatever.
Yeah,
and I feel like I read that book and when I was watching it like sort of clicked this gear in my mind. It was like, it occurs to me that I have seen a lot of those out there before, and it occurs to me that like, it's not my particular brand of decor.
I remember reading the book and being like, I'm never hanging an encouragement in my house.
Exactly. Yeah. Nothing wrong if you do at all. But I know that was like, it was almost like someone gave me permission to have that feeling,
yeah,
when I was reading that book. And so in our house, we don't have anything that had said anything, but I recently stumbled across one that has like resonated with me in a huge way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a sign made.
Is it the sign? I think I saw it this past weekend.
Yeah, it
is
was it hanging,
the one that says you'll think of something.
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
I saw that and I was like, Ben has an encouragement in his house.
I do. We had it made because
I saw it hanging in your house and I had not seen it before. And I was like, I can't believe you didn't tell me about this. This is a huge development.
I know.
I can't believe you hugged this in your house and I don't know about it.
It was a big deal. It was definitely a big deal. But like, I love it. I love it so much. And it's like, it's funny because the way that you were just describing yours, I was like, this is the exact relationship I have with mine.
Yeah.
Because I am like, unfortunately motivated by, I think, like stress and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like the thing that typically like makes me push forward is the fear that I'm not doing enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I have this odd problem, I think, with, and I'm sure that like others probably do as well, but I'll have these like pieces of my personality that I know about myself, but like, I can't put them together, you know, where it's like, I am always fearful that I won't be able to come up with like a creative solution to a problem, while constantly like one of the biggest like nagging parts of my personality is coming up with ideas all the time,
right?
You know, and it's sort of like, how is it that I can come up with 10 ideas a day and can't assure myself that I can come up with a creative solution to a problem,
right?
You know, and so, and like, I don't know why those won't like coalesce the way that like,
yeah,
I want them to.
Mm-hmm.
Because it should, like, and this is something that has been true about me. I mean, you can probably affirm this as far back as I can remember,
yeah,
that like that I've had this, you know, personality trait. So it's like, why can't I convince myself of that? So I saw this like little phrase once upon a time, and I was like, man, that just like, that it just like hits, because it's like, you will, you know, it's like, you will think of something,
right?
Like, like, because that's what you do.
Right.
Like, it's all you do.
Right.
It's probably, like, your number one strength.
It's so interesting, like, the certain, like, yeah, like, combination of words that can, like, unlock certain things in your brain. Because you're like, I read, like, you'll think of something, and I was like, this is such a perfect sign for Ben for all the reasons you just said.
Yeah.
And I was, like, thinking about it later, and I was just like, what... Like, what made it so perfect for you? Because I think, like, when I read that, it's like you said, like, you have trouble, like, internalizing that particular sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I think for me, it's like, it is something that is, like, extremely internalized, where it's just like, yeah, I'll think of something. Like it's, of course, like, I don't, it's like, and it does bring me, like, a lot of calm a lot of times. It's just it's a struggle I don't have to have that, like, that makes it difficult for me to understand when other people
don't have that feeling.
Know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like at some point something happened in my life and I was just like, yeah, we'll figure it out. Like it, whatever it is, we'll always figure it out.
Right.
Like things will work out. It's like at some point I think my brain just decided that and it's just like, okay. Yeah.
Well, and what's interesting about it to me is that, like, you know, everybody's always like, you know, like fearing the unknown, or the only thing to fear is fear itself. It's like, I feel like there's this like sort of like, that's very wise, you know, like sentiment attached to it. But it's almost like, I think really the unknown is like, if you were to source back most of your fears to their roots, I would be willing to bet that in most cases, that's all it is. It's always unknown,
right?
Like, you know, and because I was talking to Alice about this exact same thing the other day, and I was saying, like, let's say, you know, you fear spiders, you know, it's like, and she was like, because that was her example. She was like, well, no, like, if you're afraid of spiders, you're just afraid of spiders, you're not afraid of, like, the unknown with spiders. And I was like, I don't think that's true, though, because I think that if you went, like, let's say you went on, like, an educational path and you studied arachnids, and so you went to school for 2 years and every semester you're taking class after class after class on, like, what they do, what they're capable of, the importance of them, you know, like, all the different, like, species, you're handling them, all these types of things. I bet you wouldn't be afraid of spiders at the end of it, because you would know so much about them,
right,
that by the end of it, it's like you don't have the unknown anymore.
Right.
Like, you have, like, you have tackled the unknown.
Right.
And so it's almost like a question of, like, is it exposure therapy, or are you just, like, learning more about the thing you fear?
Yeah. I don't know if that's quite exposure therapy. I think exposure therapy would be like, all right, we're just going to lock you in a room with spiders.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. That's fair. Not recommended.
Yeah. Maybe not.
But so, I mean, that is sort of,
but you're right. It's like education.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I think that a lot of like where my fears stem from is, if I don't already know the solution to a problem, then it's like, it's unknown to me whether or not I will solve it.
Right.
And I think that it's that very thing that scares, like, the crap out of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I would say that that's like, that's the biggest thing. I'm just like, it's like, I don't like not knowing how I will solve a problem, and usually I can't rest until I do.
Mm-hmm.
And typically what happens is that once you solve a problem, there's just another problem.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's like, I mean, that's, which is a huge portion of existence, you know, I mean, it's just like, you're always kind of
right. So it's the next thing.
There's always the next thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For
which
sure.
Which is very interesting. I don't know how we got here, but that is like, I think it would be interesting if you were the viewer at home, like, what is there something you fear? And then if you were to like learn more about it, is it possible it could impact that fear? And I know that there are like irrational fears toward things, and I would say that this doesn't fall, that is a different probably psychological phenomenon,
right?
Less overcomable by just, you know, just exposure or education. Yes.
Also, yeah. Do you have a personal mantra that you would put on a sign in your house?
Yes. Okay, because that's how we got there.
Yeah.
Because that's what the sign does for me. It's like it is that affirmation. It's almost like letting me know. It's like, don't worry. Like, you will think of something.
Right.
It will be okay.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that you're so aware of it, though. I'm jealous.
Oh.
I'm envy of this power.
Well, on the other hand, I feel like you just are constantly just doing things that I would otherwise assume I couldn't do.
Oh, wow. This is extremely interesting.
You know,
because that's the okay.
It's like I think for like the twins' birthday or something, you were building some sort of like
climbing
rock wall thing. And I was just like, oh, man, like, I don't think I could do that. And it's like, you know what? I bet I could do it.
Yeah,
it's like,
absolutely.
I don't have the tools and I haven't built something like it before, but I feel like it's just cutting wood and screwing it together.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes, exactly. And that's a very good point. I mean, like my assumption, and I feel like we would, at one point in time, you and I built a set of cornhole boards together. Mm-hmm. And I feel like during that experience, it became glaringly obvious to me that if you got into like this like building woodworking, not that I'm like a woodworker or anything like that, but like if you got into it, you would be way better at it, way faster than I've ever been able to pick it up.
Oh, well, I do not. What about that experience made you think that about me?
Because of angles.
Oh.
I feel like there's a lot to do with angles that I feel like I got an A in geometry. I remember being good at it. I don't remember how to do much of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. No. Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, this was a long time ago now, and I remember everything adds up to like 180, but I don't remember all of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just trying to find like, I don't know, whatever, protractors and such. But I remember we were trying to figure out how to like get like the legs to swing out at like the right distance and the right height, and you know, like how, like everything you need to do in order to make that happen. And literally ever since that day, I have saved the blank that we used as like a jig.
Oh, okay.
So I have probably made, I don't know, 15 sets of cornhole boards since then. I've used the same jig every single time.
Oh, interesting.
So like I'm actually always using your math. Oh. to finish these problems, which I think that, like, you know, obviously with a lot of time spent with it, I've been able to better understand a lot of how it works, and I've done it, you know, a bunch of times. And mm-hmm. so like the way that it all comes together makes a lot more sense in my brain. Also, cornhole boards are squares mostly, not tremendously difficult to piece together, but yeah, so I don't know. I have a feeling that if you ever did venture into these waters, you'd probably just blow right past me.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about that. But you've been doing it for so much longer and to build a lot of things. But what I always find interesting is that anytime I'm doing any sort of like medium or just even like light construction, anything with tools, like with another person, how almost everyone has invented their own way of doing it.
Yes.
Which is unbelievable to me, that like so many different ways, like there could be this many different ways to hang a curtain rod on a wall.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, all you got to, like, in what method are you figuring out where to put the holes?
Yes. You know? Yep. And I remember that when we were moving you into your new house, you guys had this big mirror that you, I think you've since taken it down, but it used to be over your couch.
Yeah.
And I remember like we were getting in there and like you guys were just like, let's just put stuff up. Like while we're here, while we got the tools, while we got people, you know, and so it was cool because we were like going off the truck and then like onto the walls.
Right.
But your father-in-law was there, and I remember that, like, I think it was our good buddy Mike, your father-in-law, and me, and all three of us had like just a very different approach to this exact thing. Like, where do the holes go? Like,
yeah.
Do you measure off of a level? Do you measure off of the ceiling? Do you measure from the floor? You know, like,
right.
And it's all like this triangulation of like, these two holes need to go into the wall in order to hang this thing.
You're right. Yes.
And I remember being like, I am trying really hard to follow your father-in-law's approach, but I don't think I understand it. But I also hung this exact same mirror at your old house and it worked then. And you know, so yeah. I'm like, I don't know what to do. And that's like one of those, like the, what is the word for it called? It's like the, I don't know, like the information was so different from me that I was like shutting down. I was like, I don't know if I can think about all this. Like I can't figure out how my method connects with his method at all. And therefore I don't know how to do his method. And now I'm useless.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just going to stay back. If you need me to help lift it.
Yeah. It got on the wall in the end.
It
yeah.
Did.
It is. It's interesting how, you know, when you have your own system, it's like, this makes sense. It works. I got it.
Right.
Yeah. But it's so weird. Yeah. With like picture frames and stuff where, you know, you'd think, oh yeah, I want it right here. But it's like, how are you going to figure out where on the back of the frame that thing goes versus where it goes on the wall?
Yep.
And what's your starting point? And yeah. all that stuff.
When I was hanging my encouragement,
yeah,
you'll think of something on my wall. Mm-hmm. It did take me like 17 minutes longer than I wanted.
Oh my gosh, yes. I was hanging curtain rod this past weekend, and I think it's the most frustrating thing to hang because it's like if you're hanging, typically when you're hanging a picture, everything's really close together, and it's very easy to get the level from like one nail to the other or something. Or you probably just need one nail, you know?
Sure,
whatever.
Sure.
This is like. You can't, everything you're putting on the wall is very far apart from each other. And not only need you to get two things to line up, but probably you need three things to line up.
Yep.
And it's just like, and if they don't line up, then the rod's going to be crooked.
It's going to be very apparent from across. Yeah.
And you're probably only going to be off by a little bit, meaning that if you're going to put new holes in the wall, you're going to have to move everything. So you're not just re-drilling a bigger hole into the wall. And it's, but you know what? I got it all right first try, so no problems.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of
you. Yeah. Yeah. Curtain rods.
Transition.
Anyway.
Transition!
Okay, Jay. So I have kind of an interesting question because I had not really truly considered this before. But like, you know how I've posed the question before about like what our generation will be like in retirement? Because like, I tend to think about like our grandparents and associate them with like maybe like, you know, quilting or antique cars or like
right.
things of that nature,
uh-huh.
things that maybe they wanted to do for most of their life that like now they have either the time or resources to do.
Oh, that is not how I land it. Elderly hobbies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Give me your elderly hobbies.
I think that my interpretation has been that like elderly hobbies are elderly hobbies because these are hobbies you can do with your present physical fitness level.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it will still work based on my example.
Okay.
But so one of the things that I have often hypothesized is that as our generation reaches sort of that stage, is that because we've grown up so much with video games that in retirement, there may be like this like really big shift that maybe gaming could become like an older man's game.
Yeah, like the seniors division at the esports tournaments are like insanely competitive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think that like what you'll have is a lot of people who maybe have looked for the time available to play their games and now have it.
Right.
You know, in spades.
Yeah.
And so that I think it's always been this like kind of big curiosity to see like what these like alterations look like generation after generation after generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like even, you know, our parents, for example, are, you know, they've entered their 60s and, you know, I mean, they like have ridden multiple century bicycle rides in a month before, which is a 100+ mile ride.
Right.
You know, I'm like endlessly impressed with the level of physical fitness they're still you know putting to the test today. But on the flip end of that is another interesting phenomenon that I think is possibly going to have like reverberations, and that is on like the children end of the spectrum, because when we grew up we watched a lot of like cable television.
Yeah,
we were surprisingly, considering what we do now, we were a Nickelodeon household.
Yeah, for sure. We watched a lot of Nicktoons.
And with that, I feel like we were constantly being exposed to all of the toys that were in the toy aisle at Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was the type of thing where like that was where mom would go to like get groceries and household essentials and all the rest. And she would bring us, you know, with her. And then while we were there, we of course wanted to go to the toy aisle because we wanted to see the things that we had seen on TV, you know, and plead our case for why we needed, you know, the new attack packs,
mm-hmm.
Which was mm-hmm. a toy that we had as kids.
Still have them.
Yeah.
At my house right now. It is interesting that you would, it's interesting if that's what was going through your mind as a kid when we went to the store. Because my interpretation of watching most commercials when we were kids was mom won't buy these. These are things other kids might one day own. Like I rarely watched commercials under the assumption that I was going to be allowed to own anything.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I have no ability to say which perspective is more likely to be more common.
Right, yeah.
I would say that the thing that I always thought was they always were able to make them. I was even as a kid able to understand that, like, they clearly went and set up like a really cool course to show off this new dune buggy remote control vehicle,
right,
where it gets to jump off little dirt ramps and skid and throw dirt at the camera and stuff like that. And it's like,
yeah,
I don't have that in my backyard. And that was the type of thing where it's like, mom and dad are not going to let me build that in the backyard either.
Right.
Although I probably would have had some amount of ambition to try.
Hey, you can do it now, man.
I know. It's true.
Go build an RC track in your backyard if you want.
I'd have to do it on my land, but I could put it somewhere. This is a good idea.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll chase that. We'll come back to it.
You could probably get really awesome RC cars now that go way faster and have battery life that isn't 10 minutes.
Possibly even like gasoline.
Gasoline.
I know. This is all good thinking. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the point is, though, is that now as we fast forward to like our kids' generation, there is a little bit of a difference that I think will exist in terms of the relationship with toys. Because, and I don't know this for sure. I mean, like, I certainly know that our, like, even Addison already, who can, you know, pick up a block, already has many toys.
Right.
But we have two things that I think are structurally very different from when we were kids. And that is streaming services, for one, which just don't have commercials. So, like, you're not interrupted in your show every, like, 5-6 minutes and being shown some other
latest new toys.
Right, exactly. But in addition to that is, like, there is the ability to click list or order, you know, groceries or household essentials online.
Yeah.
You know, which means that for us as kids, once a week, we were going to some version of a grocery store with mom to get that week's load.
Exactly. Like, if mom's going to Walmart, it's like, yeah, she might only be intending to buy groceries, but we, the kids, know there's a toy section.
Yes.
And you know what? As a parent, it's really hard to overcome, you know, children's nagging for certain things.
Yes.
Especially when the alternative is that they're going to be like really loud and screaming and in public and
sure.
And you're just like, whatever, it's $5. You're good.
Right. But so because I think we're bypassing a couple of those aspects, it does feel like, and I think that as a whole, as a you know, collective group of people, like the idea of consumerism has just become much more visible.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think that when we were growing up, we were sort of in like the heat of it, like existing, you know,
in
its fullest form, because TVs were, you know, household essentials at that point in time and whatever. So I guess I'm somewhat curious as time goes on, or even like what holidays might look like for our kids, or like is there a chance like we will approach them slightly differently than like they had existed for us as kids, like where maybe it's like I don't know. Does any of that track?
No, I know what you mean. Like, you know,
your kids are older enough to actually want and to play with toys regularly. So you probably already have a much better basis for how much this could be true.
You're right. I mean, for sure, I think we dodge a lot on the front of like, yeah, Luke, you know, Luke and Nick and Nate will watch TV, but it is never anything that has commercials in it.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they're not being impacted at least a little. Like, one of the things I love watching a lot is the Cars movies, you know, with like Lightning McQueen and stuff. And like they love it so much. And they, like, just this past weekend, our parents got each of them like a little Lightning McQueen diecast car. And I can tell you that even before that, we already possessed some.
Uh-huh.
And there have been, I mean, days in a row where Nick has not let the car out of his hand, including sleep. You know what I mean?
Like,
he is watching it and he loves the character and he loves it. He knows he has the car and he loves playing with it at all times. You'll hand him something and he'll just like reach his fingers around the toy and continue holding it, you know? It is, I mean, it's adorable. So it's like the desire to play with the things you're seeing on TV for sure is still there. But obviously, I mean, it's hard to say Cars isn't, you know, just a giant commercial for merchandise on some level. Pixar's not normally as bad about that, although like Toy Story is a movie about toys and they made toys based on the movie.
That's true. You know, that's true.
It was a pretty good starting point for them.
But you don't exactly watch WALL-E, you know, necessarily.
Yeah, you don't think.
I need my own WALL-E.
I need my own WALL-E toy, right? I mean, although that just sounds pretty cool.
It does sound pretty cool. I mean, as an adult, I want a WALL-E toy.
I think we have a WALL-E bath toy, so it doesn't do very much. But Luke does like WALL-E, surprisingly.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll request it. He has like certain things he wants to watch that he'll associate with certain people or like times of day or something. So whenever our mom comes over, he wants to watch WALL-E. Like, mom does not like it.
Oh no.
Which is surprising to you because it's like one of my favorite movies. But yeah, so they definitely do really like cars, and we have like a little Lightning McQueen thing they can ride around on. But yeah, I would say like Luke has been in a, like, you know, a big department store that has like a toy section like less than 20 times in his life.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. So it's like, cause I mean, and this is like, I can only ever speak to my own experiences, but like one of the things that our mom did when we were growing up at a certain age was like for our big birthday present, she would give us like $100 bill. And yeah, it was always the, like for me, it was like winning the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
I was so excited about my $100 bill. It was like it's a kind of wealth that I know I will never, ever, ever feel again in my life.
Right.
Because it was just like, it was infinite money. And I loved it. I thought it was, because it also seemed like it always came with like a no questions asked pass to like Toys R Us or to Walmart or, right, or something like that, where it was like, mom knew that like, because I had it, that like I also was allowed to go and use it for something.
Right.
And then it also seemed like on top of that, there weren't like any major restrictions on like what it was. So if I wanted to buy like a TIE fighter and an X-Wing, it was like, no problem. If that's what you want,
right,
like, as long as it fits into the $100, like anything goes. And so, yeah, like I know for me, I coveted this stuff. I was so excited about it. Like the marketing worked so well on me. That being said, I would say that my guess is that you were probably a lot better about getting something and then actually loving it and playing with it well. That would be my assumption, is that I would probably be more excited to get the thing. And I think you were probably more excited to have it. Like once it was there, you would put it to good use.
I suppose. I feel like the thing we collected a lot was one, Hot Wheels.
Yeah.
And two, like Star Wars action figures and stuff. I don't remember there being a ton of commercials for Star Wars action figures.
No.
In particular.
That's true.
But it's like, it didn't need the marketing, you know, like it still took over the toy section.
We found them.
And then like Hot Wheels stuff, it was like, there were tons of Hot Wheels commercials for like specific tracks and stuff, but it was like, all we ever wanted was just the cars.
Right.
You know, we're just going to race them right in a straight line.
It was actually, yeah. I feel like we would have these Hot Wheels tournaments as kids where we had this couch that sort of like faced into like a hallway, and we were able to affix the tracks. So it was just side by side, straight line tracks, gravity fed. You'd put the cars on top, let them go. I think we would use a book to let them go or something so that they would like drop at the same time. Did we have a way to do that?
I think it was just a lot of hands.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like that could have led to a certain amount of cheating, but
it certainly could have. We had to, you know, you had two tracks, so you had to have the car win on both tracks.
You
had to like do a reset, because sometimes like one track would be like a little bit faster for whatever reason or another.
Good point. At the end though, it also had this like little like plastic checkered flag thing, so like as one of them fell through, it would like push a pin and then it would cause the checkered flag to like fall to the side of whichever car won.
Yeah,
which was amazing. And then we'd also sometimes set up the video camera so we can have a slow-mo replay.
You never know. Yeah. Sometimes like, we'll see.
I do remember though that I have no idea, like looking back on it, it feels like a huge part of our childhood. It's possible we did it like six times.
It felt like this was sometimes like the whole family's like Saturday night entertainment. Like, everyone get your Hot Wheels. We're making a 64 car bracket and we're going to narrow it down.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, and like we all had like our little plastic suitcases full of them. And like, you go and sit down and sort of deliberate about like, which cars are we going to try tonight? And
right.
It's like,
yeah. How are we going to seed these cars?
How's the track running?
Yeah.
Running fast tonight.
It's a little tight.
get a quick wind check.
Yeah.
Is AC running or
what's unbelievable? And what's unbelievable is that basically the same car would always win the entire tournament every time.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you know, one car is just the fastest and it's just gravity.
Right. It's
true. There's not really any skill.
But it was definitely it still felt like maybe tonight's the night.
Maybe you know? Tonight.
Like that yeah. like my Butterfinger convertible will finally win.
Right. You know? I guess along the way you would find like plenty of opportunities to race cars that hadn't raced. So maybe you were never figuring out the new like number one car, but you would figure out like, yeah, where the Butterfinger convertible, oh, it actually was like 10 slots higher than you thought. It's faster than a bunch of other cars.
Who'd have thought? Yeah. Very yeah. exciting stuff. Mm. Where was I going with this though? Man, this has been my train of thought today. It's just been running right like, off the proverbial tracks.
Yeah. Not unlike some of our Hot Wheels.
Hey.
I think in general, the toys we get for the kids will be largely driven by what we already know them to be interested in and will be like, because a lot of the toys we were marketed to as kids were like toys for the sake of toys. Like, do you remember like Dr. Dreadful or Creepy Crawlers or something?
I do.
Yeah, right. Like there was no show or anything associated with Dr. Dreadful or anything like that. But it was like a big toy you could own.
Right. Yeah. Creepy Crawlers were very, very interesting because it was like the Easy Bake Oven for, I don't know, like, but like you didn't eat the things. You just made these like little rubber molds of like scorpions and spiders yeah. and such.
Yep.
And it was like, I mean, I think it was the same exact technology. It was like a small, like heated light bulb that would,
yeah, that would just like, you know, cook a piece of plastic into like a hardened form.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That was another one though that I feel like we did a lot of.
That's true. We did that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And actually, I think I was showing Beth that exact toy recently and she was like, oh my God, Luke would love this. And I think they do still make it.
Do they really?
I think they still make it, yeah.
I assume that this was one of those things where the melting of the rubber almost inevitably was not healthy.
Oh, I mean, who's to say? Who's to say? I don't, it probably isn't. I'm sure nowadays, whatever chemical you're using is like much more like approved and free of toxins and
BPA free.
Yeah, BPA free, whatever.
Yeah.
I saw this is like one of those things that though, like I remember when we had Creepy Crawlers, like we also had like a few of the plates from when Dad was a kid that had like older molds or something. I think what I was watching was that like the old molds, like the original one they made worked really well. The problem was that it worked well because it was made out of materials that were like more dangerous or something.
Lead?
Yeah. It's like this plate, the metal gets really hot, so kids are burning themselves, but the molds are great.
Right.
Whereas
right.
like the modern day ones is like, well, these molds don't really work as good and the plastic's not as solid, but you know, no one gets hurt. So I guess there's that.
That's probably you know, yeah. the whole point.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's another one that we did as a kid. And this was like one of those things that I actually feel like probably would be more fun as an adult, realistically. And what's even more fun is just watching TikToks about them because then you don't have to wait at all. But it's a rock tumbler.
Oh, yes. I remember the rock tumbler. I remember Dad telling us about the rock tumbler that he had when up at Grandma and Grandpa's. And it was like, what? It sounded like the absolute coolest thing in the world. And I remember just like so anticipating the next time we went up to Grandma and Grandpa so we could get the rock tumbler.
Yes.
And then I remember getting it and it being like the most disappointing thing.
I think I was under the impression, like if you've ever been to like a like one of those gift shops where you can like fill a small velvet bag with like extremely beautiful stones.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably like some fool's gold in there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the little tiger's eye petrified wood and stuff mm-hmm. like that. It's like, I think I was under the impression that we could take gravel from our driveway,
yeah,
put them in the rock tumbler and they would come out as gemstones.
Right. Yeah. Like this is just an alchemy machine.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So like there are all these misconceptions that I know as a kid I had over and over and over again where something was explained to me how it was going to work.
Yeah. I made some assumptions.
I visualized it in my head and I feel like it's like someone didn't explain this properly.
Right.
Like, you know, because I think probably what it really comes down to is that like in order to have really neat final products from a rock tumbler is for one, I think today you could just literally order rocks that are known to come out of the rock tumbler and be pretty.
Yeah.
But then it's also like, you're just buying
work.
Yeah, like,
why don't you just buy the finished product?
It's more, it's almost like this is more for a demonstration than it is fulfilling, but maybe.
Like, I'm even thinking about it now. Like, what kind of rocks would you put in there? You know, I haven't seen this side of TikTok, I suppose.
Oh, goodness me. Well, you should definitely stumble across some good old fashioned.
Some rock tumbler TikTok.
Some rock tumbler TikTok.
Yeah, I remember we had like gravel from our driveway in ours. And it was like. And if you don't know what a rock tumbler is, by the way, it is an erosion machine. It is a cylinder with basically light sandpaper on the inside that will rotate endlessly because it's plugged in. And you put rocks in there and the sandpaper or whatever the surface on the inside of the cylinder will erode away the rock slowly and eventually make it very smooth and ideally, I guess, very pretty.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much the, like, so how do you actually get like polished stones without going through and like using like a buffer disc or something like that?
Right.
This is like the very slow, like accelerated version of nature.
Right.
And I suppose that if you were like a geologist or even just like a hobbyist who knew enough about stones or where you lived in the world, happened to have neat stones available for discovery.
Yeah.
It would be a lot of fun to go out on a hike, pick up one, identify it, bring it home, run it through your rock tumbler, and then have the finished product.
Yeah.
Like, I could see that being fulfilling.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you came up with something you wanted to find, you found the thing, you ran it through the process, and you got the end result.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that ultimately led me to some layer of disappointment about the rock tumbler is that I almost thought it was going to be a money printing machine and I would just basically have all the unlimited gemstones that I ever wanted.
Right. You just go get the gravel, throw them in there, wait like a week. And then look, now you have like, amethysts, rubies,
sapphires, topaz. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
This is what comes from driveway gravel,
exactly.
Correct?
Yeah.
They should have taught me geology in kindergarten. I don't understand why that doesn't come up sooner.
Sorry about that.
It seems like this is really like the time that kids need to be informed about how difficult it is. And also the fact that like Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, the fact they're like pulling gemstones out of the ground that are like pre-cut. It's like, that's not realistic, Disney.
Yeah, that's one, not realistic that they're pre-cut, and also not realistic that they're that plentiful and just easy to find.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Those Seven Dwarves are really living a humble lifestyle.
They really are, because the amount of gems they're pulling out of the earth, they should be like owning the kingdom, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a fan theory.
Yeah.
The Seven Dwarves are actually the ones who own the kingdom.
Wow.
I know. Wow.
They just live in this cottage because they understand
the humble life.
They're right. They're like, there's no reason to like show off our wealth. Okay.
Right. They read
We Dopamine Share a Nation. Room. All
right. They read Dopamine Nation and found that the fulfilling lifestyle is better than the filled lifestyle.
Right.
As it were.
And like, we're good. We're wealthy. We're fine. We share a room. We go to work every day. We still do the physical mining ourselves.
It's no big.
It's no big. Where did the gemstones go? Where do they go with Snow White? I don't know.
Where do they go?
Where do they go?
And they're harvesting so like cartfuls a day.
Cartfuls a day. And they're going back to the same mine.
If they filled like the bottom.
If I found a single gemstone that looked like that ever, I think I'd be doing pretty good.
Probably.
Yeah.
Any one of those would be on display in a museum on a global scale.
It always comes back to treasure on this podcast.
Jay, it's because treasure is the literal best.
Treasure is the best.
Because it's the quest, man.
It's
like the rock tumbler all over again. Remember when we talked about rock tumblers?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that.
I think when I was a kid, I think this is the thing that really disappointed me the most about the rock tumbler is that like, I don't think I thought gemstones were coming out of it, but the idea that it was going to like make this like nice smooth rock was already just an exciting prospect to me.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad was like, yo, it's going to take a while. And I was like, no big deal. I'm a patient child. Like to me, a while would have been like a week, you know, which is still not a while for a rock tumbler.
No, it's not. It's not. But that's why I said TikTok is so fun, because they're like, all right, guys, we're putting these in. We'll see you in a month.
Yeah.
Month's over. Let's see how they did.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that was nice. I didn't have to wait the whole month.
Man, I'm going to have to go inspect this. This sounds like something Luke would really enjoy. Luke loves himself a good rock. There's
rocks
no
are
doubt.
Pretty great. And you know, if
great.
And if you were to allow him to go and discover some great rocks in the wild, put them in, think about how good he's going to feel about himself.
If you think Luke's not already bringing in wild rocks to the house, He'd be dead wrong.
Maybe he has a ruby tucked into one of those.
Maybe.
Just got to tumble
it. In fact, probably.
Probably. Kid's got an eye.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I came home yesterday, and this is something that bothered me. He likes to like dig in the dirt, and so there's always just all this dirt on the sidewalk up to my house because there's like mulch beds on either side. And I was like, oh, man. And he's like, no, don't clean it up. I made a dirt sun. And then like I looked at it more, and like sure enough, he'd made like the garden bed is like curved, and he made like the shape of a sun with like rays coming off of it all the way around. I was like, so you did. This is good. Okay, I won't clean it up. Yet.
This is good quality.
You had an idea and you executed Dirt Sun. Get it.
I'm proud of him. Yeah. I'm proud of him. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, on that note, I feel like we're at a good spot to close out for today. But if you guys have any personal experience with rock tumblers, be sure to let us know.
Let us know how many gemstones you discovered out of your driveway gravel. You know what didn't help was that our grandparents had
Herkimer diamonds. You're right.
They're from Herkimer County, New York. So their gravel, like if you like at certain angles, is like shimmery because like there's like actual little
crystal structure
in the gravel. So it was fun to literally walk around their driveway and you could find like little crystals.
You could find crystals that were like the size of quarters.
Yeah.
Like you're so right.
Yeah. This did not help.
Okay. I wasn't that delusional.
Yeah.
This is exactly what the problem was.
Yeah.
The driveway strikes again.
The driveway at Grandma and Grandpa's.
I'm like guffawed right now. I'm like, I can't even believe I've never thought about the driveway before.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Because as a kid and to this day, I have been obsessed with treasure and that it gave me this illusion that it was so attainable.
It was right there.
All I needed to do was go and scour the driveway and it would, man.
You know what's interesting is that at you can go, there are like Herkimer diamond mines. You can go pay to go out with like a hammer and just like smash rocks open and see if you can find it. Or it turns out you can just order a bed of gravel for your driveway and go nuts.
And just walk around.
You'll have
way better results than standing in the sun wailing on rocks with hammers.
Yeah.
Goodness me. All right, guys. Well, I need all of your feedback from today's episode. If you happen to read Dopamine Nation and you have something that you find is something like a dopamine source for you that you're willing to now exclude, I'd be curious to know what that could look like. I think that would be very interesting. All of your thoughts and feelings can go over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. We do appreciate all of your feedback. Additionally, if you'd like to support us on Patreon, you can do so over at patreon.com/popcornculture, where we have a variety of extremely cool and fun tiers. If you'd like a little additional access to the pop. Otherwise, until next time,
pop, pop.